Santa's Gift Program to Me, How I Train My Genie Stem Cells, Lecture 4, Ways I Visualize My Dreams. Our seminar so far has been dealing with the relative and the absolute, and we'll deal more with the relative and the absolute. Ways I Visualize My Dreams. I mellow in my dreams. Are you able to mellow in your dreams? Are you able to just be comfortable with your dreams? Or do you wake up in the middle of the night, all uptight? Do you sometimes have nightmares? Do you sometimes have the feelings of things just not going right for you? Do you feel that there's some unfinished business that you haven't attended to, that there's a mission that you're... How many dreams have you ever had? And I know you never counted them, but how many dreams have you ever had where you woke up and you had not finished doing what you were doing? You had a certain thing that had to be done, there's certain work that had to be done, a mission that had to be done, and you didn't do it. You had to save somebody, and you didn't do it. You woke up just as you were helping someone to save their life. Now, if you haven't had those type of dreams, then that's just fine too. But those are the kind of dreams that many people have. They have dreams in which they are very necessary for the world. And what the dream is attempting to teach them is the idea that, hey, it's just a dream. It's just a dream. Wake up. Smell the roses. Wake up. Don't get uptight about something that is of little consequence, that has nothing to do with you. No. Why are you dreaming a dream in which you're not completing things? Because you're feeling rather indispensable. You feel very important. You feel you're very necessary to life. You feel that if you're not there, something will not be done, and not be done right. Why is it that people are so upset when people don't leave a will? When they don't leave a will, what they're doing is they say, I don't care, I'm leaving, do what you want. But you're supposed to say where you want the money to go and what you... No, you're the one who wants the money. You're the one who wants to know what is to be done with my estate. And I don't care. Give it to the state. The state! Why give your money to the state? You should give it to us, you know. And give it to your children, your wife, your husband, your family, your relatives. Why? I didn't give it to you when I was alive. Why should I give it to you when I'm dead? You know? But we were living on the income of your income, you know. We were living on the income of the money that you had. And now that you're gone, we don't get it anymore. The state gets it. Well, the state gives you some, but whatever. You see, we feel so necessary. And we are made to feel so terrible that when we die, if we haven't put our house in order. What's the first thing that death is supposed to say to us as he comes calling? I will come and pick you up at midnight tonight, so put your house in order. Get your things in order. Get your world in order. That's a human thing. A very human thing. Who gives a darn? The guy or woman or person who's dying doesn't care. You know? If they cared, they wouldn't die. But they don't care. All they want to do is just be themselves and have fun and go off on to the next adventure. Why is it that children run away from home? Because they have bad homes? No, because they want to be themselves and have fun. They want to go off on an adventure. They want to get active in life and get into things and do things. But they don't respect that we have raised them. We want them to have the best. We want them to have college and schooling. We wanted them... Yeah, but they don't. You didn't raise them to change their mind or to change their will for themselves. They got to be themselves. They got to be themselves and go off and follow their own dreams. Isn't that true? Got to follow their own dreams. Now, why is it that people die of certain diseases, one or the other? Why do people die of cancer or die of this? The remark was made the other day that I had killed somebody or that they had killed somebody, and that I had said that they had killed them by their attitudes and so forth. Well, they did. They did. The other person wanted their attention, and they didn't give the other person their attention. They were sick of giving them their attention because they were sick all the time. And they were had a bad attitude, and they wanted to push other people down and around. And other people just finally said, to heck with it, I've had enough. And they were not completely devoid of everything, but they just let them be. They just ignored it. And so the people said, well, what have I got to live for? I can't push people around anymore. So I'll use the last technique, I'll die. You know. And so then they die, and people say, God's a dunk. I don't have to worry about them anymore. I don't have to worry about what they're thinking, what they're doing, what they want, how what they want out of life. I can just go on living my own life. You should have lived it all along anyhow. But you don't. Because you're always thinking, what did Daddy want me to do? What did Mommy want me to do? What did my sister want me to do, or my aunt or somebody want me to do? What did my husband or wife want me to do? What did my children want me to do? And that's just a bad dream. Just a bad dream. It's a dream you choose to have. We have a map up in the world here, and it says the world. And the most legible thing on the map is the word the world. Now, all of the map itself is so laid back, you hardly see it. And really, that's the way it is. Our name stands out so that they don't really know who we are. And we don't know who we are. Now, how do you mellow in on your dream? How do you mellow in on being who you are? Well, for one thing, you just start saying to yourself, I like me. I like me, period. I enjoy me. I enjoy my company, period. I like who I am, period. And don't do it against somebody else or do it because of somebody else or do it to prove somebody else. Just do it to enjoy yourself. I like me. I like me. I like me. And when you say I like me often enough, pretty soon you're going to start liking yourself. As I tell you, I walk the path here, and I'm walking the path, and I say, I'm holding perfect, I'm holding perfect. And when I do that, I just chest out, chin up, and then I say, I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. And I cannot stretch myself tall enough. You know, I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. Because I just feel up, I just feel total. I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. Now, a moment before, I was thinking thoughts, and I was bending over, cogitating, eyes closed, thinking about what I was thinking. And then I said, I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. Here, wake up. You know. You see, most of our life is spent in a stupor. Most of our life is played in the game of foolishness. We play the game of life that is so important. And there's only one thing important. And I tell you, on this plane, when you choose to use your body, what happens to it? It goes away. It dies. It ceases to be. But so long as you use your body as a vehicle, as a temple of your divine self, your body is there whole and perfect. Who was telling us, you, I guess you were telling us, Sylvia, that some CEOs are in their 80s, are in their 90s, and one CEO of a company is 106. 106-year-old CEO, chairman, chief executive officer, running a company at 106. Why not? Why not? That person didn't get the message that you're supposed to be decrepit by that time. You know, you're supposed to fall apart. And why don't we all not get the message that we're supposed to fall apart? I can assure you that that person who's 106 is not spending a great deal of time watching television. They're not spending a great deal of time listening to other people saying, but you're old and you're gray now and you're beyond usefulness. Hey, I own the company. Don't tell me I'm beyond usefulness. I can do anything I please with this company. I can make it a success and I can make it a nothing, whatever I want to do. I can take all the money and spend it and go and have a great time if I want. But you see, this is being yourself. Let nobody ever tell you how to live your life. Ever. Now, that doesn't mean you should go out and do things irrespective of the world you live in. If you choose to live in Switzerland and the Swiss law says you do this, then you do that. If you live in the United States and the U.S. law says you do this, then you do that. Wherever you go. Now, I tell people if they don't like the laws, change them. Change them. Now, does that mean you got to go into being a congressman or a senator to change the laws? No. How do you change the laws? What? Who?
Put the cause in motion.
Who else? Yes. Who else? Ingeborg's saying put the cause in motion?
Yes.
You are saying, you don't have to say that. You say put the cause in motion. What do you say?
Yes, put the cause in motion.
Be creative. What do you say? You see the law reflecting who you are, your own delight. You see the law reflecting your own delight. You see, if you put the cause in motion, that presumably says you're making a change. And whenever you want to make a change, you're going against the tide in anything. I'm going to make you change your attitude, young man. You're going to change your attitude and come home on time. You're going to change your attitude and have respect for your mom and dad. You're going to change your attitude. He's not going to change his attitude. If you say, son, what seems to be the problem? I'm thinking one way and you're thinking another way. I'm thinking that I love my family and I want to do everything for them. And I think that my family love me and want to do everything for me. But you're not doing it. You're not coming home to eat at a time when we all eat. You know, what seems to be the problem? Well, I don't want to sit at the table with my brother. What do you mean you don't want to sit at the table with your brother? I never heard that before, but that's okay. Tell me. You might have a good reason. Well, he's always picking on me. Well, is he only picking it on you at the table? No, he picks on me everywhere. Well, why don't you stay away from him everywhere if he picks on you everywhere, or then just at the table? Well, I can't stay away from him everywhere, but I can stay away from him at the table. Oh, now, what do you want to do in staying away from him at the table? What are you going to accomplish by that? Well, I'm going to show him that I don't really... You don't show him anything. You just make him think you're a scared kitty cat and that you're afraid to be around him and that he's the boss. He's really pushing your button. He's running your show. Oh... That's right. Now, I'm not telling you you have to do this or don't have to do this, but we're a family. Now, let's be a family. Now, why don't you and your brother and I get together and have a talk about this and see what's going on that we can help? But, Mom! No, why don't we do that? Will you come? Will you listen and talk? All right. You see, it's a whole lot different than being threatening and chasing and hollering and trying to change things. When you bring two opposing forces together, they find they have nothing to be opposed about. And this is how it is in our life. When we have two disparate forces and we bring them together, we find that there's no problem. As they said, if they would have put the dictators, Stalin and Mussolini and Hitler, all together in a room naked, you know, no hats, no symbols, no things showing, I'm a general, I'm a this and I'm that, just naked. That, and keep them there for a reasonable length of time, maybe a week, you know. Yeah. They'd either kill each other or they'd learn to play cards together. You know, and they'd learn to think together. And then they say, hey, you know, I want to have the pure Aryan race for all of the world to be the Aryan race. And then Mussolini says, well, the Italians are a little different. Yeah, I know the Italians are different, but we tolerate you. Well, wouldn't it be an interesting idea to tolerate all people in the world? Well, why? Well, where do you start and where do you stop? And then, what's the other guy's name?
Stalin.
Stalin says, look, there's only one way to handle it. When people disagree with you, just kill them. And Hitler says, but then you lose so many good men. And Mussolini says, yeah, I know, I tried that, and pretty soon I didn't have a cabinet any longer. And so they talk together, and they talk their foolishness together because of their dictatorial attitudes. And pretty soon they realize, hey, this is a joke. I mean, I get a little tired talking about this stuff when we can't get out there and do it. And so they play cards, and they do something together. And then after a while, they say to each other, you know, Joe, you're not a bad guy. Well, Adolf, you're not so bad either. You really have a lot of interesting ideas. You certainly set Germany back on its ear after being in a depression time. Yeah, I was for the people. Well, what changed you from being for the people to being for the government, to running it just for the government, to build up the nation and to be so big? Well, you know, if I'm just for the people, you can only go so far, but for the government, you're total. You run the whole show. Well, Mussolini says, yeah, I used to do that too. So finally I got some deputies, and I'm letting them run the show, and I'm going out with my lady friends. And Hitler says, well, I got a lady friend too, and I don't spend enough time with her. You know, it seems like we're just working for nothing. We're letting everybody else have all the pleasure of having their lady friends and having their world, and we're just working our heads off. And so Joe Stalin says, you're right. I haven't seen my wife for a long time. Well, I tell you guys, when we get out of here, and we'll get out of here, we're not dead yet, you know, and when we get out of here, let's call it a truce. I'll live in my country, you live in your country, and you know, you live in your country, and we'll all just be ourselves. Well, Mussolini says, yeah, you guys can talk. You got nice big countries you can live in. And Stalin says, don't think that. Just because we got a lot of land doesn't mean that we have the Mediterranean climate like you have. You've got everything. Can I come down and visit you down there? Sure, anytime, Joe. You come on. Happy to have you. And Adolf says, hey, you guys, you're making it sound like we live in a happy world. Well, we're a happy world if we make it so. And so the three guys finally are let out because the war is over now. There's no one to lead them. There's no one to incite them into war. And they come out there and they find people are going about their normal daily activities. And they say, hey, don't you know who I am? And the people look at them and say, no, who are you? I'm Hitler. I'm Adolf Hitler. I'm the Führer. I don't think anything to be furious about, you know. You're just a normal guy. But I do know that your girlfriend's been asking about you, wondering where you are. Hey, she still cares, huh? Of course she cares, but you never spend any time with you. You don't tell her how much you love her, you know? Well, she has to love me because I'm the boss. No. She loves you because you're a fine man. And little by little, all of it blends back. Now, is this little fairy tale I'm telling you real or not? Could this happen? Yes. Does it happen all the time with a lot of people? Maybe not in such a big operation like Joe and Adolf and Benito. You know, maybe not so fantastic, but it does happen. Now, what's going on in you? Are you having these three beings fight inside of you? You want to be a good mother, you want to be a good housekeeper, you want to be a good homemaker, you want to be a good whatever you want to be, and it's all fighting against each other. That's what Irene is doing. She's fighting against herself, trying to decide who she wants to be. Well, Irene is so many things and so capable in so many things, she could be anything. But if I were her, I would choose something that was fun. All the time fun. I say, you mean be a clown? No. But I would say, be a clown. Well, you just said no, not be. Well, I don't mean be a clown clown, but be a clown. Enjoy everything she does and laugh and dance and be happy, and don't let anything anybody says to you change you from being your wonderful self. Oh, how could that ever be? She's got to have a job. She's got to have this. No, she doesn't. Every time Irene turns around, money comes to her. People want to do things for her. Well, you mean Jorg wants to take care of her? No, that's not what I meant. Jorg is taking care of her in his own way. But so is every other man that she's ever known. So is every other woman that she's ever known. Every person in her life that she's ever known has taken care of her by loving her just like she loves them. Now, all she has to do is see that she's independently wealthy. But Herb, that's not so easy. For Irene, it's easy. She knows how to play the game. To see herself living in her ideal spirit, mind, and body. But for Irene, you know, she may have problems too. No, she knows the principle. And she practices it. And she knows how she can play the game. How she can come in there, stick a red nose on her nose, and make people laugh. Make people feel just wonderful. You know? She knows that. Yes. It's silly, isn't it? Now, here she is, the most talented princess in the world, and she doesn't use it for herself. She uses it for everybody else, but not herself. Isn't it about time that we start doing things for ourselves? That's what ways I visualize my dreams. That's what we want to do. My goodness, goodness, goodness. Time flies like a shot of a cannon. Okay. I wrap my dream in what I know, and then I discard what I know and move on to what I dream. We take our dreams and we try to make them logical. We try to make them reasonable. We try to make them something that really can work for us. And what happens? We forget about the dream. We're working on the logic. We're working on the reason. We're working on all the proper things. Now, you live in a city, and you live near an intersection that is called dangerous. And that intersection is one where cars go speeding along one street, and other cars try to get onto the lane there, and they can't do it. There are crashes now and then, and it's kind of an unfortunate thing. Okay, so you say, I'm going to see that we get some stop signs out there. We're going to get this. We're going to do that. We're going to stop those speeders. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to put speed bumps in. We're going to put speed signs in. We're going to put all these things in there. And then a little child says, why? Why? Whenever I want to walk across the street, there are no cars there. Whenever I want to do anything on the street, play on the street, I play in a ball with my friends on the street, no cars around. But you people, you're always worried about cars on the street, and they're there. Every time you turn around, there's a car, and you're worried about it. But I just like to have the street for a place to play. Well, I don't think it's very safe. Well, now, have any children ever been hit by a car on that street? No. Have any children who are playing on the street, and they play there often, been hurt by cars? No. Who's been hurt? Adults. Because adults are always so eager that they want to get to where they're going. Now, what is one of the first things that people pay attention to on the street if they don't look at signs or other things? But one of the first things they pay attention to is children. So, if you put a sign on the side of the road saying, children at play on the road ahead, what's the driver going to do? He's just going to slow down. He won't slow down because it's a dangerous corner. He won't slow down because he loves children. Everyone loves children. He doesn't want to hurt a child. So then he goes slow. And other drivers go slow. We have it coming from all directions. And pretty soon, you don't need stop signs because people are driving carefully. They say school zone, drive slower. So people drive slower. But people don't drive slower because of the school zone. Why do they drive slower, Christina?
Because they have children.
Because there are children there. It's the children, not the school zone. The school zone's a silly zone. Because you don't know when the kids are in school, when they're out of school. Mm-hmm. When children are present, drive slower. Well, when are children present? I mean, I'm an adult. I don't have any idea when school's in session even. You know? It's been a long time since I went to school, at least 2 weeks, you know. And I don't remember what our schedule was. And the schedule today is different. They let children out in there and there everywhere. Now, you see, when you just say, children, at play, on the road, what are they doing on the road? Who cares? It slows them down. It slows them down because they care. They really care in their heart. Now, they don't care about other adults because with other adults, they're in competition. Now, how do you dream your dream? You see, your dream is that you want to have that stop sign. You want to have the traffic conditions be such that they're peaceful, right? Okay. Now, what do you mix in there to have it be peaceful? What does an adult do with a pregnant woman around? Oh, be careful. Sit down. Oh, do this. Oh, be gentle, you know. Always so gentle when a pregnant woman is there. This is universal. What is the main thing in America? God, the American flag, and mom's apple pie. Mom probably fits there in there someplace too. But silly. Mom's apple pie. Not store-bought apple pie, but mom's apple pie. See, the respect for motherhood, the respect for women, the respect for that which is a tradition upon which the nation is built. Now, isn't that something? Wouldn't it be something if we had a nation that had 3 points? Respect your parents, respect your family, brothers and sisters and all, and respect your neighbors. Or, respect what?
Yourself.
That covers them all, doesn't it? Respect yourself. Now, what would you think, Gertrude, if you saw a sign, big road sign that says, respect yourself, drive happily. Yeah. Would you drive careless? No, you drive wonderful.
Yeah.
Respect yourself, drive happily, you know. Or be yourself and have fun. Drive happily. You say, well, that's license to do anything. No. That's license to be yourself and have fun. And you always do it. Now, Switzerland is a crazy place to live. Because Switzerland, even in cities, in big cities, has streets that go choo 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 choo. Wiggle around. You can't see around the next corner. And so you drive carefully because you don't know who's going to, is a sidewalk there or people walk across the street. And your little old lady who lives here isn't going to walk down to the corner and then across the street and then back up over here to the store. She's going to go straight across. And everybody else too. So you see, these are things. Now, what is your dream? Is your dream to live in a harmonious universe? Is your dream to live in a peaceful universe? Then create it. Create it, not by changing the laws, not by going in there and telling other people how to live, but just by seeing it done. Who said that? Just seeing it done. Seeing it done. Seeing all in harmony. See all in peace. See all in right action. Now, what's Rex doing? He's walking around here looking for someone to give him attention. Now, if no one gives him attention, he'll lay down and he'll rest. Come. Now, lay down. Good. Good boy. Oh, Rex, you are such a good boy. You are such a good boy. Now, he's going to be perfectly happy. Now, if I shout at him, don't you bother those people. Now, Rex, stay away from those people. Don't you do that. Don't you do this. What's he going to do? He's just going to keep looking for more people to kiddle with, you know. Now, what are you doing? How are you creating your world? How are you creating your life? How are you making your dreams worthwhile in reality? What is your dream for yourself? Is your dream to live in an ideal spirit, mind, and body? Is your dream to have a beautiful world of peace and love, unconditional love? Is your dream a dream of oneness with allness? Now, those are absolutely idiotic and stupid dreams. Why is that, Gertrude? Why are they idiotic and stupid? Don't you remember the author of our book? What's his name, Ingeborg? Sylvia?
Which book?
Now?
Oh.
Oh.
Eckhart Tolle.
Ah. What did Eckhart Tolle say?
When the now.
He said there's nothing else in life except the now. And the sooner we start living in the now and enjoying the now, we enjoy every single thing that exists right now. Now, he didn't say that alone. The great philosophers have said that for years. And he merely made it in a new set of words and language and beautiful. But now. When do you want the world to be at peace? It is, isn't it?
Now.
When do you want harmony in your life?
Now.
When do you want everything to be done? What?
It's already done.
Oh, I see. That's nice. Now, Ellen is taking us a step further, isn't she? She's not saying that we want to have it done now. She's saying that there is no now, that it really is already done. There's not a time in which it will be done, to be done, hopefully for it to be done, but now. Can you understand that? Can you accept that? That this is what it is? Now? Okay. Now, what does that mean to you? What does that mean to you? That could mean that you change your whole way of thinking. You change your whole way of thinking. I see Rex lying here in front of me, peaceful, happy. He's enjoyed himself. Little Love came over and tried to entice Rex into games, and Rex wouldn't pay any attention to him. Rex didn't let that little schnook bother him at all. And Love just lay there in the sunlight and put his nose on Rex's nose and says, "Come on, let's have a tussle. Let's give them something to think about." And Rex says, "My dad doesn't allow no nonsense done in here. My dad sees everything peaceful, harmonious, and joyful in here, right?" Okay, now, what do you see in here? Do you see everything peaceful, harmonious, and joyful in here? Do you see that? Do you know that? Then that's what you have. Now, when does it start? When does it start?
Now.
That's already done.
Never.
It's already done.
It never started. It's
that's right.
So.
Now, see, these are little kicker words. We're so glad that we got to the point of saying, now. We're so glad that Mr. Tolle has come out and written this beautiful book. But if you read his book, it has a lot of good stuff in it. But it also has a lot of confusion in it. Because you don't know what to think. Because how can you think that when it is done now and there is no now? Now doesn't exist. Now isn't. There can be no now. Because now is past by the time you think of it being at all, you know? It's just crazy. And so we write a book about now, and you really got to have a lot to think about. And just like me, I'm writing a book about absolute. And writing a book about absolute, it's there are no words that can describe an absolute concept. We talk about the absolute, but we do not talk absolute. But absolute is great, it's beautiful, it's magnificent. But it's what is. You and I are all absolute. And there's nothing more to be done. But we are trying to understand it. We are trying to work like the theologians. What do theologians do? They try to understand the Bible story. How can you understand a Bible story that is not a Bible story? The Bible was written by people about experiences that they had, the story of the religious development of the people. It tells about the stories of the experiences that they're going through. And what are they doing? They're only telling about their human activities, their human life, the things that they are going through. And they're not telling about spiritual life. You show me one place in the Old Testament, the New Testament, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Talmud of any kind, in the books of any kind, of any religious group, and you show me anything spiritual, and I will show you everything is very human, very relative. It has to be, because that's the only kind of words we have, are relative words. So, when you know the story of the Bible, and you know how it was written, just the New Testament, which is a current version, Jesus' life is supposed to be the pattern for the Bible, the New Testament. Well, the people who wrote the chapters about Jesus were not there. They have it all by hearsay. They heard someone say that. They picked up the information here and there. That's why the four Gospels are so different. There are a lot of similarity because a similar story would sort of radiate, but how each tells it is different, because each tells it from a different point of view. Now, they have Jesus saying things that are inconsistent with his attitude. They have Jesus doing things that are inconsistent with his attitude. Now, I may throw this little bombshell in there if you like it. Did Jesus really die on the cross? Was there really a cross? The crosses were there. They used them in those days to hang up prisoners who were naughty, and they wanted to have them die on the cross. But they were used. But the thing is, was it such a casual thing? We'll exchange this prisoner for that prisoner. You give us, we'll kill this prisoner because he was bad, and let your man go. We don't want you to let our man go. We don't want you to let our prisoner go. We don't want you to let Jesus go. Because the priests were having a hang-up with him. Because he was teaching people things that they didn't want to teach. And he was a rabbi. And he got it from his interpretation of the Old Testament. And so, 35, 50 or more years after Jesus was no longer there, doing his teaching, his ministry lasted how many years?
33.
3 years. He was 33. His ministry lasted 3 years. Okay. So, what did he say? What did he say? So, these people write down what they remembered. And there, Peter was there. So now Peter is 50 years older at the time that the Bible comes out that he's doing this. And now, is he still teaching? How old was Peter at the time that Jesus was there? 30 years maybe. So now he's 80 years old. Now, and Paul, how old was he at the time that Jesus had that experience that he write about? He was maybe about 35 too. So here he's 85, you know? No. Interesting. And he went around writing books on these things, and he never even knew Jesus. I mean, I'm not trying to belittle it. I'm merely trying to show you that the inconsistencies of it keep it from being a spiritual book. A spiritual writing has no inconsistencies in it. I haven't seen any spiritual writing, but it has no inconsistencies in it. You look at the Bhagavad Gita. You look at the teachings of the Buddha. Not the Buddha so much, but you look at the Brahman teachings. And as you look at them, they tell about the war story. They tell about how these people were fighting and doing all these various wonderful things, and how the leaders were spiritually illumined people. Can you ever imagine a spiritually illumined leader leading people into killing each other? Would you think that a spiritually illumined teacher would lead people into peace? Mm-hmm. Into peace, not war. Into oneness, not separateness. The Tower of Babel spoke of the people who were all one, who built a tower to God because they wanted to reach God. And this was a church. The church says, and God destroyed the tower and made everyone speak all different languages so that they could not communicate and be one in the belief that they could talk to God. And then it was a continuation of the Old Testament where they said, you cannot see God and live. Remember? You cannot see God and live. And then this was merely the priest's technique of keeping the people under control. And it is the same today, although it is easing up a little bit, but it's the same today. It's the same today. And you think that the Catholic Church is tough? Huh. You go into some of these Pentecostal churches or Protestant churches, they are really tough. And they have the rednecks that go after people who are not cooperating. You'd be surprised how many churches have been burned because they didn't fit in with the pattern that the rednecks wanted them to go. It was not being burned for one reason. It's being burned because it was a teaching a religion that they didn't want to believe. They didn't want people to be taught. Isn't that interesting? You see, now, this is how these things all go. How long are we going to forget where the Bible is? Now, Ingeborg?
Yes, sir.
Where is the Bible? Bitte? Where is the Bible?
In me.
Thank you, my lady. The Bible is in us. The Bible is in us. Jesus said, go to the Father within, who seeth in secret, and he'll open, reward you openly. Our Bible is within us. So if each of us were able to dream and go to that Bible within ourselves, go to that wisdom within ourselves, go to that magic within ourselves, we would know all. We would know all. Ask, and it will be given unto you. Seek, and you shall find. These are words that come through to us. But these are words that had not started with Jesus. He didn't say that in the beginning. I don't mean he didn't say it in the beginning. He was not the first to say that. That was said by philosophers long before him. And if you did research on them, which would be rather magical, because the books are all distorted or burned or not there any longer, like the Alexandrian library being destroyed by fire. But the thing is, many people knew and passed this down. The whole Bible of the Hebrew faith was a word of the mouth passed down by the priests. They memorized it. That's why the rabbis had to memorize it. That's why the Brahman, the Hindu teachings, is passed down by word of mouth, because they didn't have any writings. It was written down no place, and it was passed along, and they passed it along by word of mouth. And then the scribes would write it down, but nobody could read. The priests couldn't read. The scribes couldn't read. Really, the scribes could not read. The scribes only wrote down what they had given to them. And they don't know. And there was no one to check their work to make sure they did it accurately. They couldn't, because they couldn't read. It's very interesting and very true. And at the time that Jesus' writings were put down, when the New Testament was being written, it was being written in what language?
Aramaic.
And in the Aramaic writing, it was written with no capital letters, with no spaces, and no commas or periods. It was just a string of letters. You had to figure out where they started and where they stopped. Now, you think to yourself how absolutely intolerable. Well, I showed the group a little statement made the other day. Did you see it? Where we'll find it. It's just a paragraph, and you read it. The first and last letters of each word are there, but the inside is all gobbled up. And you can read it as quickly as you can read anything else. because you just read the first and last letters of a word, it says, and you automatically, mentally fill in the rest. It's quite interesting. So we'll show it to you. But that was what was taking place in those days. Now, can you imagine the scribes? You know what the word scribe meant? One who accepts the information. Not who writes it, but who accepts it. And then it was later added that they were the ones who copied it too. But, you see, in you is such a book of magic, such a book of wonder, such a book of purity, such a book of truth, that if you just let it out, if you let it out. Now, Heinz certainly is a silly man, a very silly man. He has a wonderful gift, a gift of illogical humor, a gift of saying things in a way that everyone can be smiling at and be happy with, and yet it has a deep meaning to it. I mean, he's a tremendous philosopher, but he's not doing anything about it. He's not doing anything with that gift. And there are many others like that. Then there's our Dorothea Zimmerman. She's a beautiful, fantastic woman, over 90. She's been a follower all of her life. She followed the great teachings all of her life. She doesn't realize that already she is not only the vessel for all that knowledge, she is the understanding or interpretation of that knowledge if she just sit down and write. If she would sit down, not because she has to, but because she wants to share what her thinking is on these things, or just dictate it, you know, whatever. We have taped this dictation just like our machine here. You know, it does wonderful things. And that's what we wanted to do. Now, she's got a message to say. Now, what would happen if, what was her name who wrote Harry Potter?
J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. R-O-W-L-I-N. Right. Right?
Yeah, probably D-S.
Yes, Rowlands. Okay. Mrs. Rowlands was a ne'er-do-well secretary. She earned a living. She was a school teacher, too. But she wasn't very good. She was okay, just average. But in her spare time, she wrote her love. And she wrote the first book on Harry Potter, step by step, not as a book, just as articles that were tickling her heart. She had to write it down because it was exciting. Well, then people liked it, and so she wrote more. But her first gifts were the most precious because they were the most blessed, most universal, most from her heart. Now she's writing commercially. And because she writes commercially, she has lost a bit of that charisma that is her real presentation. It'd be so good if a person could write, and write and write and write, not show it to anybody until they're done. You know, I can imagine Muhammad. You know Muhammad? You met him? I can imagine Muhammad did not show his transcript to anybody until he was done. He did not show his Bible to anybody until he had finished it. I can imagine that. Because I can imagine a lot of people would have told him, oh, no, your P's and Q's are not dotted correctly, and your dates are incorrect, and your this is incorrect, and that. And he just wrote. And what he wrote, his followers took for gospel and believed it and followed it. It's wonderful. Now, you too, you have dreams. You have dreams, and you have ways of expressing these dreams. And that's why, like with Muhammad, we have to be mysterious about it. I am mysterious about my dream. I don't tell anybody about my dream. It's a secret. I don't tell anybody, not because the dream is bad or good, but because I want to have that dream unfold. I don't want it to be your dream or your dream or your. I don't want it to be my dream. And the only way it can be my dream is if I keep it to myself. Now, Dolores Cheeks wrote us her thesis, and she said it was a long time happening, but She sat down, and in 2 or 3 days, she just wrote the whole thing. Wrote the whole thing from beginning to end. And it basically, it was very good. It has a few run-on paragraphs or run-on sentences, but basically it was very good. And when I get done polishing it editorially a little bit, it'll be a fabulous thing. And that's what she wrote. It is fabulous. Now, why didn't she do this before? She writes little vignettes and tells us what she does with her students at school and how she feeds them beautiful ideas. Why didn't she do that? Write about that. She could write about all... She has within her some of the most fantastic stories that you could ever imagine. And her stories are global. She goes all over the world telling the stories and telling people about the philosophy. Telling people about my book. She should be telling people about her book. She should write her book, which would be far better than anything I could ever write, because it would be hers. And then go around the world as she does, or could do, or will do, or may do, or has done, and tell them all about what happened. She took a class full of immigrants who had just arrived, and they had to learn French in Canada. And they had to learn to speak the language of the French community, or else they couldn't fit. They wouldn't allow their immigration. And they had to learn to know the rules and the program of the French community. And she taught them. She taught them. And they were from here and there and everywhere, from every country you can imagine, speaking different languages, blah, 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 Babylon, truly. And she taught them French from basic up. She taught them to think together, to live together, to be harmonious, not to judge one another in the slightest. Within 1 year of her class, that is, during the class, 1 year, they all spoke passable English, French. I don't know, maybe they spoke English too, but I'm sure it was French. And they knew the rules of the community, and they made good citizens, and they were wonderful. Now, all immigrants don't go to her class. Some go to other teachers and say, how can you teach these people? They all come from different languages. They all speak different languages. How can you communicate with them? You know? And they're adults. They're older than I am. I'm a teacher, and I'm 13. I mean, I'm 23. You know? And they're 50, 60, 70 years old, and I have to teach them. You know? And they already know it all. You know? Well, Dolores didn't say any of that. She said, I'm here to show you what you want to do, to show you how to do what you want to do. I'm here to open your hearts up to what Canada is, the glory of Canada, wonderful free nation, you know. I'm here to show you the wonderful French language, which is the language of dignitaries, the language of beauty and music and harmony, you know, the language of love, you know, and ha, ya, 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 you know. And you see, she knew and teaches how to do these things, because that's her heart. Now, if she were to write a book, or two or three, just telling of the adventures that she had as she was sharing these things with these people, not blowing her own horn, that would happen in the process, but just saying how the people grasped the wonderful things that she was able to share with them, and how they could take their secret desire to be a great citizen in Canada. Because they would never tell the people back home that way. They would tell the people back home, yeah, I'm immigrated, I can now be over here, and now I can have everything the French have, everything that the Italians, the Canadians have. But they don't say that they have now become a Canadian citizen. And they have worshipped this new country and respected this new country, which is what Americans would like immigrants coming here to do. But can you see? You have within you a dream, you have within you a mystery, a magic, a secret. And the movie The Secret, it foretold one thing. It said this secret is kept from all mankind. And how is mankind going to learn that secret? They have to find it out through this incantation of seeing the movie The Secret. And of course, what was the secret? The secret was the law of cause and effect. They called it the law of magnetism. But we know that it's a step further in our awareness from the law of magnetism to the law of cause and effect. And now, what's a step further beyond that?
Stem cells.
Stem cells. Something that can readily be felt, understood, utilized, and implemented into our world. This is what we want to do. We want to put those things to work in our world and have great things happen to us. And they will. They will. So, ways I visualize my dreams, I mellow in my dream. I play with my dream. I wrap my dream in what I know, and then I discard what I know and move on to what I dream. We know the Bible. Now let's move on and write our own Bible. And I am mysterious about my dream, because that way I will accomplish it. For I keep it to myself, and I live it, and I express it, and I am it. Now this afternoon after lunch we'll come back for lecture 5. It is magic watching me reveal what is. And children, not lesson 6, children reveal their dreams easily. So be ready for some fun stuff this afternoon as we have the blue sky, the sun, the gentle warm breeze saying, have a lovely lunch and know that I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.